everybody. Welcome to Katie's Crib. We are talking today to Dr. Harvey Karp. He is a pediatrician and child development expert who's practiced pediatrics in Los Angeles for over 25 years. He is the founder and CEO of Happiest Baby, a smart tech and parenting solutions company. And Dr. Karp is the author of three books, Happiest Baby on the Block, Happiest Toddler on the Block, The Happiest Baby Guide to Great Sleep.
Which is for the first 5 years of life. It's such a weird title, Happiest Baby Guy, but it's really for the first 5 years. So sleep from 0 to 5. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Amazon, get ready for that purchase today. But just to start us off.
And just so I understand.
Yes. I know, it's a lot.
Scandal is filmed in that next room. Is that right? Is this is the main studio.
This is also a studio lot. No, this is 100% my house. And this is 100% the room I usually, at about 5 p.m. In this playroom, Albie plays and I drink wine. Mm-hmm. And then I invite over other mommies that have babies or kids of any age, and they literally tear the room apart while we drink wine.
Mm-hmm. Mother's juice.
Yeah, mother's juice, exactly. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
So, I'm a pediatrician, and that's what I do. I mean, for decades, I was the neighborhood doctor, and what happened was I kind of observed some things that hadn't really been written about before. I'm always interested in problems that haven't been solved.
Okay.
And so I was interested, babies cry, and you would be told, oh, babies just cry, there's nothing you can do about it. Or sleep, babies, they don't sleep well in the beginning, and just suck it up and deal with it, and
right.
sooner or later it'll get better, or let them cry it out. And that stuff never made sense to me. So long time ago, I came to realize that people in other cultures, much more successful at calming their babies. You go to some you know, areas in the world, you never hear a crying baby.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And they're not like genetically different babies.
Right.
I mean, it's the parents doing different things. So that got me interested, and I started to study that. And then I did it on thousands of babies to really perfect my techniques. And that's when I wrote the Happiest Baby on the Block video.
And those five S's.
The five S's, exactly right.
You guys, the five S's are literally like the most famous thing of all time. Like everyone knows, like in my group of friends, it's a lifesaver.
Yeah.
Can you explain to people what the five S's are?
Yes.
For the 50 billionth time in your career.
Well, no, I mean, I love it because it's just so empowering to parents. So, five S's. So, the first key concept is babies are not ready to be born after 9 months. Horses are ready. Cows are ready. They can run. A horse doesn't get stuck by its head. It gets stuck by the body. And
right.
the body is as strong as it can be so it can run that first day because...
Otherwise, it'll get eaten by...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Our babies and we survive because of our noodles. And so the brain is as big as it can be and still get out, and it's a tight fit. I don't need to tell you that.
No.
So, and what happens, I kind of think of it like these James Bond movies. You know, James Bond is on the motorcycle and he's rushing out this underground parking lot,
mm-hmm.
and the metal door is coming down, and he's rushing, and the door is coming down. He's going to be locked in there,
mm-hmm.
and at the last second, he puts the motorcycle down. No, he lies it on the ground and slides underneath just as this thing is closing.
And that's our baby's head.
That's our baby's head.
My
yeah.
vagina hole.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, great.
So, and if you miss that opportunity, then that's why we do cesarean sections, and we're lucky we can do that because, like, my wife's grandmother died
in childbirth.
I mean, that wasn't that uncommon.
So because the head is so big and we get out earlier than, say, other mammals do,
right.
we have this thing called the fourth trimester, right?
Exactly right. Yeah.
Where the baby really should still sort of be mimicking the world in which it was in the womb because it feels unsafe. It's such a huge transition.
And this is why it's so tough for new parents because the next 4 months or 5 months, you are one big walking uterus. I mean, inside, you're holding your baby nonstop. You're rocking. Every time you breathe and every time you walk, your baby is being rocked and jiggled. The sound is... actually, it is... except babies are underwater. So when you're underwater, you can't hear the high pitch. So it isn't that that they hear. What they hear is... And your voice and other things like that. But it's kind of muffled because they're underwater.
Wow. So then it's so shocking for them to be out. I mean, June Raphael, who is a wonderful actress and a dear friend of mine, she was on Katie's Crib the first season, and she said the first 3 months, she calls it the dark days of yore. And like, but yeah. basically, why is because it is, you are essentially still providing a womb for your kid, but it's just now so full on because you have to consciously carry them around, consciously make those sounds, consciously make them feel safe
yes,
and close to you, which is hard.
But you're doing it 14 hours a day, and you used to do 24 hours a day. From the baby's point of view, it's a ripoff, right? It's like, whoa, bait and switch.
Right.
And from our point of view, it's like, are you kidding me? This
right.
is nonstop.
Right.
But this is the big lie, because today, if you have a nanny or a night nurse,
yes,
you know, you're pretty well off. If you have two nannies, I mean, you're like really well off.
Who the hell has that?
Elon.
People. But yeah. Like, what? No.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, you don't have that. However, up until 100 years ago, everyone had five nannies, right? Your grandma, your aunt, your older sister.
All the friends, siblings.
Yeah, your next door neighbor's older daughter. Can I hold the baby for you? Oh, okay. So, I mean, the mother was babied as much as the baby was babied. In fact, in many cultures, they have a 100-day ceremony where for the first 100 days, you don't leave the house. You are taken care of. You are bathed. You are fed. You are pampered.
Oh, I've heard of the first 40 days, but I didn't know about the
100. Oh, first 100 days. Yeah. So many, many Asian countries.
Guys, you hear it here on Katie's Crib first. Can we start a fucking movement called the first 100 days where mm-hmm. the mom and the baby are just totally taken care of for 100 days? Like, why can't that be happening? And, you know, we just came back from Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, all you Katie's Crib listeners and viewers. But there was a six-week-old baby there, and I think she had a wonderful weekend because every time the baby was, like, fussy or communicating, the baby got passed around mm-hmm. to grandma, to great-grandma, to aunts, to uncles, to cousins. And so the baby was always, like, was getting new, someone who had energy when the mom is so tired and like, I can't keep
exactly.
holding the baby. And I
right.
know the baby wants to be held right now.
No mother in history ever did that. And women today, this is one of the things that's so upsetting to me, because women are told, hey, listen, you decide to have a baby, so this is your responsibility
your problem,
now.
Right.
It's your problem. And
right.
don't complain about it because you wanted to be a mom.
Yeah.
Well, I did want to be a mom, but I do have to sleep also. And everyone's different. Some people do fine without sleep. Other people, it's total torture. Well,
I understood for the yeah. first time ever why sleep deprivation is a form of torture in
yeah.
war times.
Yeah.
I was like, if I got behind the wheel of a car right now, I might drive off a cliff. That I can't do
yeah.
only 4 hours of sleep. I can for a week, but I mm-hmm. can't do it for weeks.
Well, and even the 4 hours, it's broken up in little pieces. It's not even continual sleep you get as a new mom. And that makes it even tougher. Studies definitely show that if you get 6 hours or less, you're essentially equivalent to a drunk person. You get into car accidents the way drunk people get into car accidents.
I felt that way.
You do. You're kind of disoriented. And some people, again, are much more sensitive to that. It's not even 6 hours. It's broken up little pieces of 6 hours.
So the fourth trimester, is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, fourth trimester.
Okay.
But just to follow up this one point about being drunk.
Great.
Yeah, besides mommy juice. It's a really serious issue because so many mothers accidentally or intentionally fall asleep with the baby. And you'll read, oh, well, in other cultures they do that and it encourages breastfeeding. And there's some truth to that. However, you would never bring your baby in bed with you if you were drunk.
No.
Well, why would you do it if you're so exhausted you're the equivalent of drunk? And video
yeah.
studies have been done that show that mothers, you know, you're not, you think you have one eye open all night long, but you don't.
Yeah.
You're so tired that you fall into a deep sleep and you can pull the blankets over. Almost 4,000 babies die each year in the United States.
Oh my God.
In the first year of life in their sleep. 70% of those babies die in bed with their parents or in another unsafe place, like on a sofa with their parents, things like that. Terrible tragedy.
It happened to us once when Albie was really little, like maybe 6 weeks. I was so tired. Adam went out for one thing for the night for a couple hours, and I never took him in bed with me. I always breastfed him in a chair in his room. But I was like, I'm going to try it. And I breastfed laying down in my bed. And the next thing I knew, Adam came in and he was like, Katie. And I was mm-hmm. like, what? And he said, Albie's head looked really weird. He had gotten himself, now a blanket wasn't over,
yeah.
but he had gotten himself in a sort of weird position. And I fell asleep and I didn't even realize
no,
I fell
no, you don't.
And
know
I don't
that.
Know for how long. And I don't know. I mean,
you know,
scary.
There's something called microsleep. This is a little science here. So we go to sleep. We think, okay, now I'm going to go to bed. I put my head on the pillow and then I fall asleep. And you think that you're kind of aware when you're allowing yourself to fall asleep. But actually, there's something called microsleep, which is when part of the brain goes to sleep before all of the brain goes to sleep. And this is what happens when you're driving and you know you're tired and your eyes are rolling around a little bit, but you're still awake. And then suddenly you fell asleep. When you have microsleep, the brain is so close that, boom, just in a second, the lights can go off. I mean, in your head, and you can fall asleep. And that's what happens with the baby because it's cozy and sweet and nice.
You're so freaking tired.
Yeah, yeah.
So just the five S's
that
are a savior for women, especially in this first 3 month where a baby can be really, really fussy because, like you said, they're not really ready to be outside of their mom yet. They have to scientifically and physically. Mm-hmm. But the five S's stand for.
Right. So the five S's are five ways to imitate the womb. And interestingly, they don't just make the baby nostalgic. Oh, cool. This is where I used to live. It's not like that. It's you're actually turning on a reflex, a response that's built into the baby. So babies are okay learners, but they're not great yet, right? It's going to take a few years to get great. But they do learn things. In the womb, they're learning to recognize flavors, recognize your voice, recognize the sounds around them. But mostly babies are built on reflexes, which is built in software. So in other words, when you buy a computer, it already has stuff there that allows you to start using it right away. Babies have stuff in there that's pre-programmed. So sucking. You don't teach your baby how to suck, how to cry, how to swallow, how to blink. That stuff has to be there for survival. Even you know, there are ancient reflexes that are there. Like, you put something in a baby's hand, they grab on you. You put something in a baby's foot, it grabs on you. Well, why is that? You know, that's an interesting one. So it turns out that what's the new information in Happy's Baby is this idea that babies actually have a reflex we never knew about before, which is like an off switch for crying and an on switch for sleep. It's not really a switch, but it kind of gets them there if they're ready to. Like if a baby's super hungry, you can do the five S's. It's never gonna work because they need something else. But if they're, you know, kind of not hungry and they're not in discomfort, it'll ease them into sleep. And sometimes it'll calm crying in seconds.
Oh, I've seen you on the video.
Oh, there you go.
It's like, you guys, how long is that DVD? I don't know.
Half hour.
There's a half hour DVD, Happiest Baby on the Block DVD.
Yeah.
And they hand you screaming babies. And it's Adam would always do an imitation of it where, like, you know, they just go like limp in your arms. It's absolutely incredible.
Well, and my publisher hates me to say this, but I really recommend the book is a really interesting book.
The book's
got anthropology.
Amazing. I've also
stuff,
read the book.
But to
it's
learn...
the only baby book I read, actually. All the
we
way through.
We've had that to everybody who's sitting here.
I tried pregnant to make it through a lot of books. I really tried, but I was really tired and I would get through stuff. But yours, I actually read the whole thing because it's my type of book. It's broken up in chapters, so it's very goal-oriented
for
me.
Cartoons.
It's not like huge or, you know, it was just... Yeah.
But anyway, the way you learn the techniques, it's really by watching. And so I encourage people to watch the video. Kind of like learning how to tie your shoelaces. You can learn it from a book, but
it's better to see it.
Yeah. And especially for guys, because men actually...
are great at it.
They're the best in the family. Men are terrible at breastfeeding. But men are really, really good at baby calming. They swaddle snugger. They jiggle more jiggly.
Yeah, that was much better. So I was horrible at swaddling. Yeah. Horrible.
Well, anyway, so the five S's
stand for
are five ways of imitating the womb. Swaddling is the first S. It's the cornerstone. Arms down
arms down.
Is best.
Yeah, of course.
And there's
safest.
People get confused about that. But it's really, that's the way it works. Even though it looks weird and like you would hate it. But babies don't get the vote. And this is an important thing. Some people go, my baby doesn't like it. Because kids, when they're upset, they'll struggle and fight you. And you'll think that the baby doesn't like it.
No, he wants it.
But they need it. Yeah. They need it. They don't know what's best for themselves.
He was swaddled for months. And then when he got out of it, we slowly decided at like around 3-4 months to then he spent time unswaddled, just one arm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then like weeks later, he got the other arm and we only swaddled the legs. And then weeks later, he got the legs out
because
we slowly introduced him to freedom.
Right. No, that's right. As for whatever they can handle.
Yes.
You know.
So swaddle.
So that's swaddling. And swaddling oftentimes, most of the time, doesn't turn on the calming reflex. In fact, sometimes they cry more, and that's what makes you think that they don't like it. But they have to be swaddled. It makes everything else work better. And then it also allows them to be calmer longer because they're not upsetting themselves with
right, because if they're swaddles. Not swaddled in the middle of the night and they go like right, that, right. They wake themselves up, we're crying, we're here all over again. But if they have that thing, but they feel like they're in the womb and it's still constricted.
That's right. They're not
they're
whacking
not
themselves in
the face. Right.
Now, so that's the first step. And then you layer on the other four things. So then it's the side or stomach position. The back is the worst position for calming a baby. It's the best position for sleep, the only safe position for sleep. So side stomach is never for sleeping, mm-hmm. only the back for sleeping. But the back is the worst because they kind of feel like they're falling. The third is shushing.
So in your arm, you put them on their side or you put them on their stomach.
On their stomach, okay. Exactly right. So they call that the football hold
yep.
or up over your shoulder okay. where they're leaning forward. The third S is shushing, shh, or white noise, mm-hmm. but it has to be, we'll talk about this maybe in a minute. There's different types of white noise. Some work better for crying. Some work better for sleep. The third S is swinging or rhythmic motion. And the fifth S is sucking. And every baby is different. They all need swaddling. Mm-hmm. But some babies, you swaddle them and then you do the sound and they're golden. Other babies, you swaddle and do the sound, it does nothing until you add the motion. Mm. Other babies need this sucking. Some babies need all five at the same time to turn on the reflex and even vigorously, like shh. And once you get them calm, and again, if you do it right, oftentimes it happens in seconds, then you kind of slow it down and kind of gradually get them to kind of downshift into sleep.
Great. We have to talk about the Snoo.
Yeah.
Which we used like crazy. And was like having what you would say a night nurse or a nanny or any of your cousins that well, you could pass your baby off.
Your to older shift sister.
Because
that's
the
Snoo
is doing it itself.
Right. So here's the thing. You should have your older sister with you. And she would come in and say, you know, Katie, you guys sleep. I'm going to hold, rock, and shush the baby all night long. Mm-hmm. The baby gets upset, I'll jiggle and shush a little more. And if I can't calm the baby down, I'm getting you to feed the baby.
Right.
And what happens is that when babies wake up in the middle of the night, number one, if you just put the baby in a regular bassinet, they're lying there, it's so different than the world inside. Yeah. So that's why they don't sleep well. You could sleep on a cement floor if you had to. You're not going to sleep well, but you will sleep because you're going to be so tired. Right. Babies will sleep on their backs in a quiet, still bed. They're just going to wake up more. Mm-hmm. So if you swaddle them safely and you use the right type of white noise and you use the right type of motion. So for babies who are asleep, of course, it's just natural, right?
Yeah,
it's just general rocking.
Feels like they're still in there.
Yeah, exactly. Because even all night long when you're pregnant, every time you breathe, your diaphragm is moving and rocking your baby.
Right, right.
So they expect that. Why take away everything that I love and I need to sleep? I just got born. Why are you taking it all away
right,
from me?
Right.
Then what Snoo does, in addition to rocking and shushing all night, is that it hears when the baby cries and responds with a little bit more jiggle and shush.
I mean, come on. But it's true, guys.
Well, you know, we built it, my initial
it's
co-founder.
It's also super chic looking.
Oh, thanks.
Like, just Google Snoo. We'll put a link to it on We Have Katie's Crib Notes below every podcast. But it's beautiful. Like, it's so beautiful.
We're the most awarded baby product in history for innovation, technology, safety, and design. It's in three of the leading art museums around the world.
We loved it because I was a bad swaddler. And so the Snoo comes with a really beautifully tight zip-upable sleep sack sort of thing that you put the baby in. And it is it's a swaddle.
Exactly.
But I'm not doing it with all this material that he's getting out of and it's terrible.
Right.
And then it has, was it four different levels?
So it's four
rocking.
Different levels of sound and motion, and then the baseline, which is where they sleep. But it has an app because some kids need a little bit more.
Yeah, we had the app. Oh, yeah.
The app also, every day you get a download graphic of how your baby slept and how it's changing over the last week.
Yeah, it's the biggest deal ever. Yeah. Like, Beyonce uses it.
We have a lot of celebrities using it.
I'm saying that. I heard that Beyonce used it. It's beautiful. It's amazing. And it's really... As far as, yes, it is a pricey crib, but you're not paying for a night nurse, which is like $2,000 a week, and you can't pay for sleep, which is literally the only most thing you need that you would go for.
There are two questions that people have about SNU when they hear about it. Two big ones. One is, oh my God, my baby's going to get used to it, and then my baby's never
going to... How am I going to get my baby off of it?
And it turns out it's a piece of cake if you wait for 5-6 months, because then your baby is mature enough to move out. So it's kind of like eating food. You give your baby milk for every meal for the first 6 months. You don't worry they're never going to eat food, right?
I
mean, you know they will when the time is right. And the same thing happens with sleep. Once they get into a really great sleep pattern... So SNU, by the motion and sound, trains babies to be better sleepers.
Right.
It immediately adds an extra hour to two to a baby's sleep. And usually by 2-3 months, they're sleeping 7-8 hours straight.
I mean, dream.
Yeah.
People.
No,
we
no.
had the same thing happening.
I know.
And he's 7-7 now, and we trained him out of it, no problem.
There you go. So that's the one thing. The second thing is the price. It turns out, though, that, I mean, we have sales all the time anyway on the website, but... It's $1,160, which is pricey for a baby bed. But this is a gorgeous bed, the most sophisticated white noise machine, the safest swing. The baby is swaddled and attached to the bed, so they can't roll to an unsafe position. So it's the safest bed ever made. It's extra sleep for you and the baby. And it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, an extra pair of hands.
And you're going to use it for months.
Yeah.
And if you have another baby, you'll use it again. I want to get to some questions because our listeners are like, women are just struggling. This is really hard. And it's wonderful that you are providing help. From Chelsea Gambino on Instagram, what is a realistic expectation for a baby to sleep through the night? And have you noticed a difference between breastfed versus formula fed babies?
So it depends on how you define sleep through the night. In different studies, some people define it as 5 hours straight. Some people define it as 8 hours straight. Mm-hmm. So it kind of depends. What we see with SNU is that babies usually sleep 7 or 8 hours straight in a segment, usually by 2 months. And that's really advanced compared to a baby who's not in SNU. So, but if you're using, at least use swaddling and the right type of white noise.
Uh-huh,
those two things together are a big help as well. And so you would, of course, some babies are great sleepers. They'll do it really right from the first month or so. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it takes really 3-4 months to get that good, solid nighttime sleep.
Yep. Do you notice the difference between breastfed babies and formula-fed babies?
Yeah, so breastfed babies usually need to be fed more frequently. And so they're waking up more often. Breastfeeding mothers, however, interestingly, actually sleep as much or more than formula-fed.
Is that true?
Feeding mothers. Yeah, I know. It kind of sounds odd, isn't it? But that's what the studies show. Yeah.
Wow. From Joy, how do you get a teething baby to sleep through the night without using drugs? This is a really big question I have, too, because I'm really careful about the amount of Motrin and Tylenol. I rarely use it. I try basically any other thing, and he's getting all four molars at the same time right now.
Yeah, yeah, it's really
But when a baby's super screaming and uncomfortable, I give a Motrin. I'm like, if I had a splitting headache and I couldn't sleep, I would give myself Advil, so fine.
Yeah.
But how do you do it without using drugs?
So a couple of things. So some babies just teeth, it's no big deal for them. Other babies really seem to go through, you know,
pain,
angst and suffering. So one simple thing you can do is elevate the head of the bed just a little bit, just a couple of inches. Oh. Because when you're lying back, the blood kind of fills the area. Everything gets more swollen. You know how your nose gets more stuffy?
Yeah.
If you elevate your head, it's easier to breathe a little bit. And the gums are a little bit less swollen and throbby.
Wow.
So just elevating the head is one good thing. The second thing is...
And they have things on Amazon, for example, like that you go put under the mattress. I used to use it when you get colds, too, so that like the boogers and everything would sort of like drain the other way. But it's like a wedge that you put... Or I guess you could just put a book
Under the mattress. Yeah, no, you can. Or a little something under the feet of the crib.
Oh, yes.
You'll see if you have a baby who moves around a lot, then they may end up upside down in the other direction. So, I mean, try. It's one thing you can do. The second thing is using a strong white noise. Because when the white noise, when you wake up in the middle of the night, it's totally quiet and you go throb, 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 you know, it bothers you more. But if you wake up and there's some things going on, you don't pay as much attention to what's going on inside. Because the pain, it's not really that much pain as much as it is a nuisance.
An awareness.
Kind of, yeah.
And it's like throbbing.
So, but the last thing has is what you said about using, so there are homeopathic drops. I haven't been impressed by them.
Yeah.
But Motrin is a really great tool, much more than Tylenol because it's going to last longer through the night. But here's the trick with Motrin. Everybody likes to kind of give a little less than it says on the label.
Yeah.
Actually, speak to your doctor about it because the label underdoses. And so you really need to speak to your doctor.
I never give him the right dosage because I'm always like, well, he's lighter weight, you know, under the year.
Yeah.
It's at 1.875 because he's over a year old. But for the weight thing, he is on the lowest end of the weight for a kid over a year. So I'm always like, well, I'll just give him the dosage for like a baby.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and the weird thing about Motrin or Tylenol...
So they underdose just to cover their, you know, just to be super, hopefully, safe.
Maybe. But when you underdose, it's like, you may as well not do it. So there's a threshold. You have to get to a certain dose level for the effect of it. And usually for little kids, we recommend 10 milligrams per kilogram, which is like 5 milligrams per pound. Yeah. But speak to your doctor about it.
Yeah, speak to your doctor, of course. It's with drugs. We always want to be really safe and whatever. But guess what, Albie? You're getting 1.87 freaking 5 the next time you're teething in the middle of the night. From Temi, a mom who's read your book, followed all of your methods, the one dirty little secret for almost all of the new parents I know, this includes pediatricians, is that a lot of breastfeeding moms co-sleep. What's your stance on co-sleeping, and has it changed at all given how other cultures and American culture secretly co-sleep?
Right. So nowadays in our culture, so there's co-sleeping and there's bed sharing. Mm-hmm. Co-sleeping means the baby's in the room with you, hopefully right next to your bed. Bed sharing, obviously, is they're in the bed with you. Bed sharing has clearly been associated with a higher risk of infant sleep death, even in breastfeeding moms who are not smoking and you're not drunk. Because like I said, you're kind of drunk anyway, just from exhaustion. So what you want to do is have your baby right next to you, because that makes it cozy and nice and you can attend to your baby's needs and breastfeed easily, but not in bed with you. So you can have a co-sleeper, you can have a bassinet
right next to you,
or a snoo right next to you. Those are the things that you want to do. The having said that, about 60 or 70% of breastfeeding moms will fall asleep with their babies in bed with them. And you almost can't help it. It happens, but you really don't want to do that. And so it's worth kind of making a pact, like you made a promise to yourself. Not that it never happens. Of course, you're just a human being. But you really, it's such a terrible, it ruins it. Obviously, the terrible death of a child, but
oh my God.
I've spoken to moms who lost their first baby, and if your baby's in bed with you, your life is ruined. You will never, ever escape that
no.
guilt.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I can't even. From Priscilla. Priscilla's mom has been a very present caregiver for her almost 3-year-old, and when it's just the mom and the toddler together, her mom mentions he's very affectionate and acts normal. However, as soon as the mom shows up, like dropping him off at the house, he'll actually hit or kick her, not hard, but a swat to show his displeasure. Priscilla's theory is that he doesn't want to get dropped off. She doesn't know why he'd do this when it's time to pick him up. She has no reason to suspect abuse. When he plays with toys, he's always includes a grandma role for a toy or stuffed animal along with that for a mom, dad, and baby. And he will tell me outside of grandma's presence that he loves grandma. So what is going on? How do I get him to stop? His teacher says he doesn't hit other kids at his toddler program.
Super. Fantastic question. Fantastic question. And fantastic way to think about it. Because kind of, you know how the frontier guides would lead you through the forest and they'd be looking for a broken twig or a footmark, and they'd read the signs to figure out how to get through the forest to the other side. As a parent, you learn to read the signs. And what was so intelligent in that question is, hey, is it possible that my child is being mistreated in some way? Mm-hmm. You hate to think about that, but it does happen. I mean, we read about it in the newspaper every day. And so she thought very carefully about what other signs would I see if my baby were being mistreated. Mm-hmm. More temper tantrums, more bedwetting, more toilet accidents, more nightmares, mm-hmm. more acting out behavior in school, mm-hmm. more saying, of course, you think you could ask a three-year-old who's pretty talkative, did somebody hit you? You know, we kind of do that in that earnest question. Yeah. But they don't really have the ability to answer direct questions. I mean, of course
like
they
that.
Can.
No, but they might not.
So the way you often do, the way you open the door into a child's mind oftentimes is through play. And so you have the puppets and you have, oh, here's grandma doggy and here's, you know, little boy doggy.
Right.
Hi, grandma.
Right.
Grandma. Oh, little boy doggy. What do you want to ask grandma? You know, say, grandma, please don't. What? You know, and then you
start
can lead the witness a little bit. And tease
see
out.
See if he's going to play with grandma differently.
Exactly.
Or have some sort of feelings come up about that.
Yeah.
Now, if he doesn't, and she's sort of done that sort of investigative work.
So here's
what
a 3-year-old.
What is this? Is this separation anxiety? Is this?
It's probably more like there are too many things going on in his life. He's tired at that point in time. He's a little hungry. He's napping, needs his nap or whatever. And he's on the ragged edge. And so we know about the terrible twos. But the terrible twos, which are more outburst behaviors, it doesn't mean when you're 2 years old it happens. It means between 18 months and 2 years. That's when you have that imbalanced period. Usually once you get over two, it's getting much better. And then there's another one that happens between 3 and 3.5.
Oh, hello. Yeah. Oh, God.
But that's where Happiest Toddler helps you out.
Yes.
Because
and also
those techniques.
Those two I've read, but I have not yet read The Happiest Baby Guide to Great Sleep.
There you go.
I mean, and that's not only about sleeping. I mean, because that's really where I'm heading into with a lot of the moms in my mom crew are going through this, like, when are we dropping one nap, you know, two naps to one nap, and when is that one nap during the day, and now we're introducing nursery school, and how are we dealing with sleep then? Wait, we have a couple more questions. How do I know when it's time to start potty training? Will my toddler give me any signs? What are the best methods?
So there are these kind of events in life, right? And potty training is like this. It's like on the marquee and the bright lights and stuff. Potty training time. People stress out about that. Usually it's actually pretty simple and straightforward, but you do have to read the signs. So what are the signs your child is ready? Well, there are a few. Number one, they don't say no every time you ask them to do something. They're not oppositional. Number two, they have a word for pee and poop. Number three, they're willing to sit in one place for 15 seconds. You know,
because we're far from this.
Yeah, exactly. Number four, they like to imitate you. And so when you're washing dishes, they want to wash dishes. Or when you're picking things up, they want to do it. Mm-hmm. So they're in that imitative phase. Mm-hmm. And that usually comes around 2, 2.5, usually sometimes maybe 3. But usually when all those things are coming together, that's when it's opportune to start teaching them to have control over their bowels. Because when you think about it, here's the challenge with peeing or pooping on the potty. You have to do the two opposite things at the same time. You have to squeeze your stomach muscles, but relax your anus. So it's challenging, right?
I mean, still challenging for me.
We'll talk. here's the biggest mistakes people make with toilet training. Number one, they're in a rush because they think that the earlier they do it, the better, boarding school your child will get into or something. The second thing is that they're told they should make a big celebration when their baby pees or poops or that kind of a thing. And actually, you don't want to do that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You can celebrate the fact that they sit there for 15 seconds. So you can even have a timer and you read a book. You know, they're sitting there. You tell a story. You read a book. You sing a song. Whatever is going to be entertaining for your child. Mm-hmm. And when the dinger goes off, yay, dinger's over. Here's a sticker. Good job. Mm-hmm. And then you do a Happiest Toddler technique is called gossiping, where you pretend to talk to grandma on the phone later on. Grandma, Bobby sat on the potty. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And he's listening in Mr. Big Ears and feeling like, oh, yeah, I did such a good job. So you can say it directly. But then when you say it again, it like makes it 5 times more trusted. When we overhear things, we believe it more than what's
very
told directly
true.
To us. So, but here's the thing. You can celebrate that, but when they pee or poop, do not celebrate that. You know, hey, good job. I mean, you'd be positive. But,
yeah, great.
So here's the reason why. When your child is upset with you and wants to get back at you, they'll withhold something that you want. And so if it's peeing and pooping that you love, you know that thing you love, mommy? Well, I'm not going to give it to you. You don't want to get into that kind of power struggle.
Oof. So here is another question from Laurent. Please excuse me, Laurent, if I'm completely butchering your name. But Laurent says, our three-month-old sleeps in his crib both day and night with the help of a swaddler, pacifier, white noise machine, dark room. We always lay him down drowsy but awake, and he falls asleep on his own with the pacifier. He has a consistent bedtime routine and is sleeping from 7:30 p.m. to 6 a.m. with no nighttime feedings most of the time, and takes 3 to 4 consistent naps per day, ranging from 1 hour to 3 hours max.
Everyone's hating Laurent.
Everyone's like, die, Laurent, no. When is it appropriate time to sleep train in terms of getting rid of the swaddle, pacifier, etc., so that he can start to sleep independently at night? Currently, he wakes up and fusses 3 to 4 times a night, and we usually pop the pacifier back in to help him fall right back asleep. What should we get rid of first? We don't want him to become reliant on the pacifier, but it's been a really useful tool so far during the day as well as night.
Okay, so a bunch of questions there.
Yes.
Number one, that's pretty good sleep. We all have little sleep cues that help us sleep. Normally you have a pillow, you have a bed, you have a comforter. Some people have their special pillow or their special sheets.
That's my husband.
Yeah. Adam is a sensitive guy.
Yeah, he is. And he really likes his pillow.
So, babies are the same way. They have their things that really help them to sleep. And each one is an individual, and they have, you know, however, interesting thing is that if you give a little bit more of one thing, oftentimes you can help them not need the other thing. So kind of like making a stew. If you don't have potatoes, but you put in a little bit more carrots and turnips, it kind of works out.
Sure.
And so the problem with pacifiers is they fall out, and then you got to put it back in the middle of the night. So first thing you do is you teach your baby to keep it in the mouth longer. Mm-hmm. And the way you teach them to do that, this is a technique in the Happiest Baby book, it's called reverse psychology. Mm-hmm. So most people, to keep the pacifier in, they're kind of pushing it in and holding it in. Mm-hmm. Actually, you want to do the opposite. You want to pull it out. When your baby is sucking on something and then you pretend to take it out, the automatic reaction is to suck in more.
Mm.
So you might experience that, like when you're breastfeeding or bottle feeding, they seem to fall asleep and you go to take your breast out and suddenly they decide they want it more. So if you do this 20...
So don't encourage to push it in, take it out.
No, pull it out. It's kind of like fishing and pulling back on the line.
Yeah.
And if you do that 20, 30, 40 times, they start to learn to be able to use their mouth muscles better. And when they feel it falling out, they start to suck it in more.
Wow.
So they can keep it in longer. So that's one thing you can do. The second thing is to make sure you're using the right type of white noise. And for a three-month-old, if it's too monotonous and kind of hummy, it's not as effective as a multi-frequency sound like a rain on the roof sound or even a vacuum sound, that kind of thing. So play around with the type of white noise and make sure it's loud enough. It should be about 70 decibels, 68 to 70 decibels by your child's ear. So you don't put the sound by the ear, but you can get a little decibel meter on your telephone and measure the sound at the level of the baby's ear to see that you're not having it too high and too loud. And then for swaddling, what the Academy of Pediatrics recommends now is that we stop swaddling at 2 or 3 months of age because we don't, or when babies can roll over.
Right.
We don't want them rolling over swaddled. And so so the best thing is for Laurent to speak to her pediatrician and get her pediatrician's advice. What's hard is that a lot of babies do well with swaddling, need the swaddling for 4 or 5 months or even 6 months.
Yeah.
And yet you don't want them rolling over swaddled. So it becomes a real dilemma for parents. It's one of the reasons that we made Snoo is because once they're secured in place, they can't roll over. And then the Snoo sleep sack that you were talking about, and actually now we have a swaddled blanket called Sleepy, which is the same sack, except it doesn't have the wings that attach to the bed. And it's an award-winning swaddle. We call it the 5-second swaddle because literally, boom, 5 seconds
They're
and it's
in.
Done. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So what happens with that swaddle is that they're little armholes. And so when your baby gets to be 4 or 5 months, you can let one arm out. Well, it's exactly what you do with Albie.
Yeah.
Let one arm out, then
the
let the second
arm out.
And so you wean them off of the swaddling gradually. The white noise should be at least for the first year and really more than that.
Oh,
a lot of adults sleep with white noise.
We do every night. And sometimes I get in a fight with Adam about it because my husband is, he has his pillow and he has his white noise. He's exactly like my son. My son has his thumb and he has the white noise. He's a big thumb sucker, which by the way, when does that, like, I don't care. Like it's been a blessing because we never gave him a pacifier.
Okay.
And he had his thumb. He doesn't suck it at all during the day. It's just when he knows it's nap time and I pick him up and he puts his thumb in his mouth and puts his head on my shoulder.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do it throughout the night unless he wakes himself up. Then he sucks his thumb to put him back to sleep, which is
okay.
The best.
Yes, he's self-sufficient in that way. And that kind of gets to Laurent's question as well, which is like, when do I stop the pacifier?
Yeah.
So in general, we wean kids off the pacifier, meaning we take it away, usually around 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. In the ideal world, you'll try to do that. However, and with pacifiers, you don't want to start them until the breastfeeding is going really well. So we usually like to wait a week or 2 weeks at the most before we use the pacifiers. Right. Which doesn't happen for most kids, but occasionally it's really a problem. Same thing for bottles. You like to start a bottle at a week or 2 weeks, but not really before that because of you don't want to confuse your child. Now, here's the interesting thing about thumb sucking and pacifier sucking, which it's really weird. This is not written. I mean, I haven't seen it written anywhere, but it's been my experience that it runs in families. Mm. And if the mother or father or a couple of the siblings of the mother or father really loved sucking their thumb or a pacifier or had a teddy bear or security blanket that they really glommed onto, then there's a high likelihood that your baby is going to love that as well.
Yep.
Now, you'd much rather have your child sucking a pacifier than sucking the thumb, which sounds odd because the thumb is always there. So it's like, well, they're going to find their thumb more easily.
Yeah, but to quit it.
What?
Yeah,
Yeah, you don't have control over that. It's much harder to quit, and it causes much bigger changes to the palate and the teeth. So it's much more likely to cause, you know, significant orthodontic issues later on. Once they're doing the thumb, it's kind of very hard to get them to stop it. So if I see kids starting to use thumbs a lot, I really try to kind of keep up with the pacifier so that they kind of stick with the pacifier rather than going to their thumbs. And here's the thing about pacifiers. If you look at people in other cultures, more basic cultures, they're nursing their babies till 3-4 years of age. Sucking is a normal thing for a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old. So it's no sweat, it's not a big deal. If I don't want kids walking around all day long, they've got the passy plugged in. But if you only use it when you're sleeping or when you're really upset or sick, it's a friend.
Right.
And so it's not a bad thing.
Right.
And then by, you know, 3 or 4 years of age, it's much easier for them to give that up.
Right. I think this is our last question. My child refuses to sleep in her own bed. What are some tips for getting her to sleep on her own? Oh.
So this is really what the Happiest Baby Guide to Great Sleep, you know, birth to 5 years, is one of the things that talks about. So if your child won't sleep in bed, meaning that you put her in bed and she keeps coming to your room, or she won't let you, you know, every time you try to leave the room, it's, Mommy, I need a glass of water, I need a kiss, I need a pee-pee, I need, you know, I mean, they call it curtain calls. Familiar to you?
Oh, God. Coming for us around the corner, for sure.
Because ultimately, think about it this way, who wants to sleep by themselves in a dark room all alone when the party's happening in the other room?
Me.
Yeah, right. Okay. At a certain point,
Me. Yeah, I know.
So, okay, fair enough. But kids don't want to.
Yeah.
There was a time in your life when you didn't want to miss the party.
Sure.
You wanted
kids
to be up all night long.
Yeah, no, thank you.
So, parents are taught you should let your child cry it out. And that is a tough love way. And it can work, but it can totally backfire and your kid starts vomiting and screaming and ripping the room apart. It can be a real travail. So there's a technique in the sleep book called Twinkle Interruptus. And it's a very, very effective, like 85% or so effective technique to get a child over 18 months to 2, 3, 4 years of age to stop the fight and give up and just sleep in their own bed. And there are a couple of principles involved in this. First is the Happiest Toddler technique, which is called patient stretching. So the Happiest Toddler book and DVD or streaming video teach, how do you teach patience to a one-year-old? And you do it kind of the opposite way that you think you should do it. In other words, we think that we say, you know, your child comes to you and says, mommy, mommy, do this, and you're doing something else. And you say, honey, wait one second, mommy's going to be right with you. Uh-uh, that's not what you do. You do the opposite. You immediately go to your child, oh, show mommy what you have. And just as they start to show it to you in that second, then you go, oh, honey, wait, one second, sweetheart, one second. You turn away for like 3 seconds, pretend to do something. So turn your back, pretend to do something.
And they've already moved on.
No, they haven't. They're waiting.
See, I'm not a doctor.
Because your finger is up saying, wait, one second. After 3 seconds or 5 seconds, you turn back to them and go, good waiting, sweetheart. Show mommy what you have.
Wow.
So you do that.
Someone should do that for me. I have no patience.
You do that 5 or 6 times a day for different things. Cracker, mommy, cracker. Okay, sweetheart, here's your cracker. Oh, wait, one second. Over and over again. And then you increase it from 3 seconds to 5 to 10 to 15 to 30. And then here's the trick.
Wow.
Once they're waiting 30 seconds, sometimes you only make them wait 3 seconds. In other words, they're expecting to wait longer. Oh my God, sometimes I don't even have to wait that long. It's like, this is so cool. It's like what they do to us with slot machines. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, you suddenly win, and then you keep thinking, am I going to win next time?
Right.
So you teach patience that way. You do that for like a week to teach your child to, when you go 1 second, 1 second, they know they're going to get what they want, but they do have to wait a little bit. Then you have a nighttime routine, reading a book and stuff like that. Then you have a little teddy bear or a blankie, and you have white noise in the room. You need all of those ingredients for a week. Then when you put them to bed and you read the 5 stories, in the middle of the 6th story, you go, and then the little boy bunny rabbit said, oh, honey, wait, one second, sweetheart, 1 second. Mommy just has to go see daddy. Mm-hmm. Or if your child won't let you leave the room, I just have to go on the other side. I just have to see one thing over there on the table. Mm-hmm. And you go there for 5 seconds and come back and snuggle up and start reading again. Mm-hmm. And then a minute later, one more second. And after 2 or 3 nights, you've built that up to where you're going out for a minute or 2 minutes.
Right.
And you say, here, hold on to your teddy bear. Mommy's going to be right back.
Right.
And they're clutching the teddy bear. The white noise is on. They're cuddled up in bed.
Right.
And usually by the time they're waiting 2 minutes, they just fall asleep on their own.
Wow.
And
that's brilliant.
It's really cool because it's not screaming. It's not fighting.
And
they feel
not,
like they're getting what they want.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. I'm not. I have to do that because I'll like no. I cannot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not good with him crying.
Like, yeah.
At all. Just not.
Well, you know something, this is a kind of a good trick. Sometimes it doesn't work, and you do have to kind of decide what you're going to do. But you don't have to cry it out. Sometimes you'll put a little bed next to your bed, you know, and say, honey, this is mommy and daddy's bed, and this is your bed right next to it. So you can sleep there on the floor in your cute, cuddly mattress and be right next to mommy and daddy. Or you can sleep in the room with your child and then gradually move your bed further and further away. I mean, there are different techniques described in the book. But I love Twinkle Interruptus because it works so well. And it's teaching your child a good thing, which is
patience.
To be more patient. Yeah.
Oof. No one did that. Twinkle Interruptus was not given to me as a child. This was so informative. Again, we could talk for like 100,000 hours. And I hope you guys found this to be like just so informative. The books are incredible. The DVD, the watching...
Streaming video
the streaming
now.
Video.
I mean, DVD is kind of a dinosaur.
Hello. So am I. The streaming video for the 5 S's was a game changer for us, and so was the Snoo.
Thanks. That's all on happiestbaby.com. Okay. Oh, actually, you know what we're doing with Snoo?
What?
We've started this year, we're renting Snoos to corporations. So if you have if you work for a big company, tell your benefits department.
Yeah.
So Hulu, Activision, Snap... Google, Facebook, Qualcomm,
get out of here.
They all now give it as a free rental to their employees to say, We love you. We want to take care of you.
We want you to get sleep so you come back to work and have your brain working.
That also.
Wow, that is, that's brilliant. Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time
and
being on
Katie's
Crib.
Oh, what a pleasure.
Thank you guys. Love you. Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you guys so much for listening to Katie's Crib. And be sure to check out shondaland.com where you can find every episode of Katie's Crib. And we've got crib notes for each episode where you can find out more about our guests and links to some of the resources we talk about on the podcast. And last but not least, subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, basically like wherever you get your podcasts.